south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Now, today, before I get to the important stuff, I'd like to talk about flowers, specifically exotic flowers like roses, orchids, birds of paradise, and all that expensive stuff. Expensive for you guys up in Milwaukee and Cleveland, that is. Why talk about flowers? Well, that's because Latin America is the biggest exporter of exotic flowers in the world. And for some Latin American countries, it's the third, fourth, or fifth biggest export, right behind the more standard agricultural products like coffee and sugar. And another reason why I'm bringing this up is I'm recording this on Valentine's Day, and they call it Dia del Cariño down here, which roughly translates to Sweetheart Day. And believe me, because flowers are so ubiquitous down here and so dirt cheap, you can't drive three blocks in any city without a guy running up to you loaded down with flowers. And of course, because it's Valentine's Day, he's trying to sell you a dozen roses at twice the price as they were yesterday. In fact, at twice the price that they are any day of the year besides Valentine's Day. So here's the facts. Today on Valentine's Day, you could buy a dozen of the most beautiful roses, any color you like, even mixed colors, for about $4. That's $4 a dozen, which I guess has got to be about a tenth of what you pay in the States, right? And normally, for the rest of the 364 days a year, you can get a dozen for $2. And I'm talking about big, long-stem roses. And you know, today being Valentine's Day, it's not at all unusual to see a guy getting into his car or walking down the street with two dozen roses. One for his wife and one for his mistress. Naturally. This is macho Latin America, you know. So that's what happens on Valentine's Day down here. And woe be to the guy who doesn't buy his wife a dozen roses. And the mistress, of course, she gets a dozen roses too, and always a few bangles to boot. But now I'm going to change gears a bit and read an email from a loyal listener, Robert. He, like so many gringos up in the first world, wants to come down here to Latin America eventually, but not just to retire and sit in a hammock on the beach. And you know, a long time ago, Eddie and I had that idea too, but beach life can be its own kind of prison. Especially for antsy gringos who are used to really busy lives. I mean, taking life and stress levels down a few notches is great, and that's one big reason we're down here. But still, you have to stay active, you know? So anyway, Robert, the author of the email I'm about to read, once he finally gets here, he wants to hit the ground running, business-wise. So naturally, a lot of his emails to me are about doing business in Latin America. In this particular email, first he asks the question, where do Latins look for businesses? And he doesn't mean, where do Latin Americans look for business opportunities or how to start their own businesses? He's talking about Latin Americans as consumers. He means, where do Latin Americans look to buy a product or service? For example, how do Latins go about finding a plumber or electrician, someone to fix the toaster, or even where to get a cracked windshield fixed? Well, maybe that was a bad example since most Latins don't fix their cracked windshields. And if you move down here, you'll find that out right away. Anyway, here's what Robert says. Johnny, please correct me if I'm wrong, but to summarize what you said in past episodes, if Latins themselves need to buy something that's not in their neighborhood, then they will usually look either in the newspaper yellow pages, let their fingers do the walking and all that, or check the ads in a local newspaper. This is in contrast to first worlders who are increasingly hopping to the internet to find goods and services, even if there is a provider just down the street. The lesson that I draw from this is that making oneself familiar with the online versions of newspapers, which I do now as a result of your advice, and I make good use of Latin big city yellow pages, which are also online, I know that doing that would be very educational for wannabe entrepreneurs when they finally get down to Latin America. In other words, you can prepare for the move. And I'm paraphrasing, by the way, here. He's saying that wannabes can best prepare for their move to Latin America by looking up ads for basic services in the online yellow pages and the newspapers in the city or part of Latin America that you're planning on relocating to. And he goes on to say, doing that gives one a big head start for a very small investment, mostly time searching on the internet, and of course copying and pasting and running it through a translator if you don't know Spanish. And then Robert says, it's a systematic way of preparing yourself greatly before actually getting your boots on the ground. That way, from up in Cleveland or Boise, you can do a kind of basic analysis of what goods and services are available before you even get down there. For example, you mentioned that most of Latin America is hot and also that electricity is expensive. To me, that implies a demand for air conditioning installations for those who can afford it, as well as efficient equipment. And remember, I'm kind of condensing and paraphrasing this because it is a long email. Then he goes on to say, to me it also suggests that a smart marketing tactic would be to offer free air conditioning energy audits for people considering either first-time air conditioning or an upgrade of old equipment. Then he says, as a person who likes to be cool myself, my mind went in that direction without prompting, and then I worked backwards from that goal to what others might like to have in Latin America and what's being supplied, and what smart marketers are already doing up in the first world. That's just one example of what might be a very good expat business move down there. And then he says, speaking of air conditioning, you know how many Americans love their air conditioning set to almost freezing while it's very hot outside? In places such as Texas or Florida even? At least, I remember it that way during my visits there. When air conditioning was first introduced, people would go to the theaters just to be cool. The air conditioning was a big draw for customers. And that was true with all kinds of retail businesses. Back then, just having AC drew in the customers. Then he says, I'm wondering if Latin business owners have caught on to that, or are they just behind the times as usual? Maybe they have not considered it because they assume it would cost too much, which suggests that free energy audit I mentioned will get your foot in the door. And he signs off, cheers, Robert. Okay, well, let me go through a couple of points in this email. First, I have to say, brainstorming business ideas up where you live is a very good idea, and it'll eliminate a lot of iffy propositions. So you don't waste a lot of time and money before you come down. But like I always say, you can do as much research as you want up in the first world. You can check out Latin American internet sites and download the big Latin newspapers and read their classified ads and stuff. You can check the current prices and see the availability of products and services. But in the end, you're going to find that what you think is a great business idea up in the first world that would be surely transferable down here to Latin America, well, I can tell you one thing, it's not going to be like you imagined, no matter how much long-distance homework you've done. Well, the fact is, and this is always hard to swallow for expat wannabes, and it even makes them a bit nervous. Every successful expat I know quickly changed gears about his hot first-world idea once he was down here for a while. Once you get down here, it's never going to turn out the way you imagined. You won't realize it now up in Seattle, but if you plan on transferring a business idea that you thought up exclusively when you were up there in Seattle, doing all that research from up there, the bad news is that there will be big gaping holes in the information you got off the internet, and that missing information will always center around the social idiosyncrasies of Latin society. Those little Latin quirks you can't pick up unless you've got boots on the ground and are paying attention. It's like up north. Why does one guy's bar or disco take off and another guy's crashes and burns, even when they're right on the same block in the same neighborhood? I mean, strictly by the numbers, two businesses like that should have an equal chance of surviving, right? Well, in that case, it's about the socioeconomic quirks of first world people. You know, what's hot and what's not, what's fashionable and what's cool. You get the picture. So you can't always assume what's true in business up in the first world will translate down here. Even with that gringo advantage, you can crunch the numbers up north, but it doesn't always work that way down here. You have to figure out if Latin society is ready to pay for what you've got to offer. And that means at least a passing familiarity with the Latin psyche. Bottom line, you just have to spend a couple of months down here snooping around before you invest any real money in any kind of business idea you had percolating in your head up north. No matter how many research hours you put in and how confident you are that your transplanted idea is going to work. For example, let's talk about what Robert was discussing in his email. He mentions because most of Latin America is quite hot, which is true, and that electricity is quite expensive, also true. So, obviously, that implies a demand for air conditioning installation for those who can afford it. And then he says, why not offer free air conditioning audits for people? Since that's what smart marketers are doing up in the first world all the time. Now, my take on that, since I've had so many years down here in not just the Altiplano, where it's always nice and spring-like, but in very hot areas, too, where you'd think most people would really crave air conditioning. I mean, that would be logical to any first worlder, right? Since when we're hot, we'd die without it. And the big missing pieces to that puzzle are this. First of all, nobody bothers to insulate their houses or businesses down here at all. Every building, new and old, leaks like a sieve. People never use double-pane glazing, which is a minimum standard up in the first world, and you never see door jamb molding insulation either. Never. In fact, you'd have a very difficult time finding any of that stuff in a hardware store unless it's a first-world chain like Ace Hardware. They'll probably have it in stock because they're forced to from the home office up in the States, but the stock sure won't move and there'll be dust on the product on the shelf. And I can tell you, you'd be beating your head against the wall if you tried to get a builder or an architect to insulate a building to first world standards. To them, it'll just add more cost to the project right now with no added return. Even though you and I know that it'll save a ton of money and energy costs over the life of the building. The fact is, you cannot convince builders and architects to seal up these buildings tight because Latins are just so very used to a nice, steady airflow from very leaky doors and windows, because that's the way homes and buildings are traditionally built down here. The fact is, Latins prefer some air movement all the time. And one very good argument I heard from an architect down here is that if you seal up a building and make it pretty airtight like a first world structure, and if for some reason the air conditioning went out for just 1 hour or the blower fan died, the place would just become unbearable in no time, and no architect wants to risk that with his new building. And don't forget, the word maintenance is not in their dictionary, so air conditioners break down all the time. Plus, these days, big new Latin American commercial buildings have a lot of glass in them, which can look nice and seem quite first world, but in reality, these buildings are huge energy wasters. The oversized air conditioning units for these big buildings are always working overtime against the greenhouse effect. And yes, I should point out that all the big new commercial buildings built within the last 10 or 15 years are air conditioned and they leak like sieves. And as you go from one office or one room to the next, the temperatures vary all over the place. It's too hot, too cold, or just right, depending on which room you're in. And of course, the architects who made up the plans have all the best intentions. When they went to school, they learned all about heating and air conditioning, and they learned about ideal building placement on a particular lot to minimize cooling costs according to the angles of the sun. And like first world architects, they learned 3D computer-aided design too. But what nearly always happens is there are some drastic cost-cutting measures along the way. And often the building gets reoriented to a different angle on the lot. And that could be because of parking lot placement or street noise, or because the owner's mistress doesn't like the view from the jacuzzi in the penthouse. And in the end, little thought is given to the heating and air conditioning parameters of a building. Like one commercial air conditioner installer told me, "It's easy. This is how you do it. You just calculate the actual cooling needs of a building, worst case. Then you go ahead, double that figure, and buy AC units for two buildings of that size." Extreme overkill, yes. But he said it never fails. The air conditioning will be going full blast, and a lot of times parts of the building still won't cool down. And here's why. Employees and visitors don't like a sealed up building. They all seem to crave a little outside ventilation because that's what they're used to. A little touch of home, you know? So when Latinos walk into a room that seems a little stuffy to them, they'll crack open a window or two. And of course, the air conditioning's got to try to overcome that, and sometimes it can't. Which, of course, makes for sky-high electric bills, but that's just the way it is down here. And the only real saving grace is that no one's got central heating, which means no furnaces, no fuel or ducting costs there. So, as for Robert's idea of giving these guys a free energy audit, it sounds perfectly logical to a first world person. And you might get a Latin building owner here and there to buy into it, too. But if you do that, you'll be butting up against one of those Latin American idiosyncrasies that I've been talking about. The fact that they've just got to have some windows open to get a fresh air breeze. And don't think you're going to talk the workers in that building out of that mindset either. Now, to give you another good example why you actually have to be down here a while to figure these things out. I was in a barbershop in an upscale mall, about 3 or 4 months ago, and the guy had a nice new Samsung wall-hung air conditioning unit with a remote control that was just pumping away like mad. And I'm thinking, good first world move, keep the clients comfortable. except for the fact that the front door in the place was propped wide open with a rubber doorstop all day long. You know, to get a little outside breeze, some fresh air in the place. Do you see what I'm getting at here? And that's not all. About a month ago in El Salvador, I walked into a little tienda, a Latin-style 7-Eleven, and I walked back to the little coffee shop area and sat down at a table, and I noticed there was an old-style window air conditioning unit running full blast propped up on a metal stand against the wall. Nothing unusual there, but still, the place wasn't cool at all. In fact, it was hotter inside than it was outside. You see, they never cut a hole through the wall for that air conditioner. It was never mounted through the wall so that the hot air could vent outside and the cool air in. Instead, it was just humming away, blowing cold air out the front, like it should, into the building, along with the hot air blowing into the building too. So, the net effect was that it was not an air conditioner at all, but a kind of a space heater, though the owner of the place never figured that out, obviously. So what I'm saying is this is the third world mentality, the quirks you've got to deal with when you're down here. The kind of stuff you'll learn about on my show, but I can't cover everything, you know. I can give you the general bits, but it's a complicated society and it would take me 100 years to point out all the quirks. Like I said, that's the kind of sociological stuff you have to deal with when you start a business down here. And you know, I repeat, Latins are not stupid. They're just as smart individually or smarter than any first world person. However, practically the whole society is undereducated, especially in math, the hard sciences, and technology. Compared to first world standards, of course. Even though everyone knows we're slipping fast. But that's another story for another show. Anyway, in Robert's email, he mentions another interesting thing. He says, remember way back when, before homes had air conditioning up in the States, how movie and cinema chains would use the fact that they had air conditioning to draw in clients. They'd actually advertise that fact, and it was good marketing because it worked. And then Robert says, I wonder if Latin business owners have caught on to that yet, or is there a big lag time on that too? Now you see, there's another big missing piece of the puzzle when you consider that idea. You see, you have to be down here, boots on the ground, to realize that the average Latin person, perhaps 80 to 90% of the population, they do not mind the heat at all. The fact is, while us first worlders are basically immobilized by the heat, Latins thrive in it and barely sweat. All you've got to do is drive your car around on any sunny day and you'll see dozens, if not hundreds of people just working their asses off in direct sunlight. And you and I, we couldn't take that for 10 minutes. But these people work 8, 10 hours a day doing it. It's in their blood. They've been doing it for generations. And that's why they don't crave air conditioning or make it a priority at all, even when they can afford it. And how do I know that? Well, I can tell you this. Fact is, down here in Latin America, you can still buy brand new cars and trucks without factory air conditioning. And if you can afford a brand new car or a truck, you can afford the option of air conditioning for another grand. And I'm not saying people go out of their way to find vehicles that don't have air conditioning. But what I am saying is this. Most Latins don't like air conditioning much. They say it's too cold. In fact, many times you'll be driving around in some Latino's car that has very good air conditioning. That doesn't matter. They prefer to crack a window instead. Like I said, they like that fresh air and ventilation. When weather for us is uncomfortably hot, it's just fine for Latinos. And that's why when you're down here with boots on the ground for a while, you'll see just the opposite too. When the temperature gets unseasonably cold down here, let's say 50 to 55 degrees, to us it's just crisp, fresh, light jacket or sweater weather. But to them it's miserable cold and they bundle up like it was 20 degrees in Chicago. And they're just amazed how easily we gringos deal with it. So what can you make of all this? Well, I can tell you one thing. If you have air conditioning in your business, it's not going to draw in extra customers because having AC doesn't mean a thing to the average Latin. But there are some businesses down here that have some very good and powerful AC units. And when you walk in one of those places, it's always a little bit too cold. Well, you might have guessed it's those first world franchises. You know, Starbucks, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, Sears, Ace Hardware, Gold's Gym. And you want to know why? Their new buildings are built to U.S. standards by U.S. architects. They're cookie-cutter first-world plans that are approved by the franchise. So they are airtight, ergonomic, and energy-efficient, just like their twin brothers and sisters up in Cleveland. So just like you can always count on a basic, clean bathroom when you go into Starbucks, you can always count on the fact that the air conditioning will work just fine. But does that draw in any extra Latin customers? In a word, no. Which brings me full circle to my original proposition, which basically states there is no substitute for having boots on the ground down here. And not just a two-week in and out, but I'm talking about at least a couple of months on the ground exploring. And it's not to say that all that internet research you did up on the couch in Cleveland was useless or ineffectual. Don't get me wrong, that's all good. In business, you can never be too prepared. But there will be some gaping holes in your puzzle, and you'll only really be able to put it together once you've got your boots on the ground. Which reminds me, I also get a lot of emails from expat wannabes, from military and ex-military types, who express a strong desire to expat down here and open a first world style security business, since all the upper classes and people with money have third-rate, out-of-shape, useless bodyguards that probably never even fired a gun. So anyway, I get emails from military types that say they know they can fill a niche, either as bodyguards protecting rich Latins and their families first world gringo style, or even opening up a first world gringo style bodyguard training school. And I say, you know, those are all great ideas, but you're about 10 years late, man. It's obvious that people who send me emails like that have not had boots on the ground down here. Because if they had, they'd know that a lot of Latin American countries have had a gringo military presence for many years. Not to mention all the U.S. embassies down here have a military attaché, too. Now, what you're not putting together is the fact that any U.S. military guy that's been stationed down here in a Latin American country, well, don't you think he's had the same idea go through his head a million times when he sees these rich guys and their sixth-grade educated, doofus, pot-bellied bodyguards in their bad-fitting monkey ward suits? I tell you, over the years, I've met a dozen U.S. military guys down here in Latin America who said, you know what, Johnny? When I muster out of the service, I'm going to come down here and work for one of these rich guys and get a first world salary running his idiot bodyguard brigade. I'll be the guy in charge. And you know what? A scant few military guys have pulled this off, but most Latin American rich guys, well, you know why they're rich? Because they don't pay first world salaries to their bodyguards or anyone else. So though it may be a good idea, and rich Latin American guys would love to have a gringo as head of their bodyguard brigade, they're not going to pay you 50 grand a year to do it. They're going to pay you more like 15 grand a year. And the other doofus bodyguards under you, he'll pay 5. So again, you have to have boots on the ground down here to have figured that one out. And sometimes even that's not enough. Look at these U.S. military guys. They had boots on the ground down here and they didn't figure it out. Duh. Oh, and another thing, for you military types who think you're going to come down here and start a first world style security company or first world school for bodyguards, well, that's a very good idea too, but you're about 7 years late on that one. Because you see, the Israeli military guys who are extremely good at that came down here about 7 years ago and beat you to it. Only you can't hire a real Israeli security guy. You hire someone from their company, which has an Israeli name, which is Israeli owned and operated, but all the security people are Latin Americans that have been trained by them, and they still only get $500 to $800 a month. Still a couple of $100 more than your average fat ass Latin bodyguard. But you see, these Israeli trained bodyguards get the extra dough because they come with that mystique of being trained by first world Israelis in the business. So bottom line, you guys up there in Cleveland with that great idea, don't even think about coming down and trying that. With Israeli competition, you'll be dead in the water. So I'm going to say this just one more time. If you're still an expat wannabe up there in the first world, researching and brainstorming business ideas, well, that'll give you a head start, all right. But don't spend any real money or make any big decisions till you actually come down here and check it out for a while. Because it's an expat fact of life that nearly all of the very successful ones found their niche while they were down here exploring. In fact, I can't think of a single one who incubated an idea up in the States and made it work just as he planned it up north. Okay, enough about that. Now I want to talk about something that might be a little disturbing to you, but to me, I kind of like it, but I'm a little twisted, you know? Now, I've mentioned in previous shows, if you expat to a smaller Latin town, a town 50,000 or under, they're almost always very, very safe. Kind of like Boise, Idaho. Now, I'm assuming Boise's pretty safe, but I don't know. And I've stated that these small towns remain safe because the population keeps crime under control, not the police, because they're undertrained, underfunded, and basically lazy-ass doofuses. Oops, there's that D word again. And I've stated that in these small towns, eventually, the population gets to know the repeat offenders, the petty criminals that rob and assault and stuff, and they end up being lynched or run out of town on a rail. The police do nothing, so the town takes the law into their own hands. And you know what? That phenomena is starting to happen in the big Latin towns now, too. And you know, if you've ever had a discussion with a Latin person about the cops, every Latin will tell you they just hate the sight of those lazy asses. The cops down here are about as revered as a cockroach or a dung beetle. Anyway, listen to this story out of today's big Guatemalan newspaper called the Prensa Libre. It says, and I'll translate here, in Guatemala City, with a population of 2 million, in the Central Historic Park in Zone 1, at least 1,000 persons tried to lynch three local criminals who reportedly have repeatedly assaulted persons in the area. It says the three men were cornered in a basement in a building in Zone 1, the three guys being Christian David Cortez, 23, a Nicaraguan, Jose Antonio Zungia, 26, also a Nicaraguan, and a Honduranian, Selvin Olvido Matute, 28. It says the crowd that was in pursuit took away a .38 caliber revolver from one of the guys and shot one of the presumed assaultants in the stomach with it. And then it says the police arrived within a half an hour, record time for Latin cops to make it to the scene. But the police station was only two blocks away. Anyway, it says when the police arrived to take away the three suspects, the crowd wouldn't let them. It says the mob was furious and wanted to get their revenge on these three guys, and they weren't going to let the police stop them. So they threw stones and fireworks at the cops, who returned fire with rubber bullets and tear gas. And it says after it was all over, the crowd had destroyed one police vehicle and overturned another, resulting in the arrest of five people in the crowd. Okay, now you see where I'm going with this? Well, the people in the small towns, they've been doing this a long time. They've got it down to an art. And that's why these small towns are so safe. But now, what you might call vigilante acts are spreading to the big cities, which me and most expats I know think is a very good thing. Why? Cops don't have the brains, the incentive, or the organization to clean up the big cities. So, the local residents, who know damn well who the real neighborhood bad boys are, they've had it with the cops and are finally getting pissed off enough to clean up the streets themselves. But what this particular little act of rebellion shows is that the public is not only pissed off at the criminals, they're very pissed off at the cops, too. Look, they destroyed two cop cars, which makes me wonder when you guys up north are going to get off your dead asses. I don't mean fight the powers that be. They've got the firepower. I mean become an expat down here. Then instead of being in the U.S. when it disintegrates, you could watch it on cable TV.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.